the only limits you put on yourself, at least creatively, are what you instill to some degree. Dream really big and let someone else limit you.
Hi, and welcome back to the New to Product Marketing Podcast. Today, I'm joined by my guest, Scott Shapiro, who's the Global Head of Product Marketing at Secure Code Warrior. Before we get started, I wanted to thank our sponsor, the Product Marketing Alliance. You can get 10% off their core certification course by using the code NEWTOPMM. Without further ado, let's hear from Scott. Hey, Scott, how are you doing?
Hey, Maggie, how's it going?
Thank you so much for joining us. So first off, before we start into today's episode, if you could just introduce yourself to the New to PMM crew, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, everybody. My name is Scott Shapiro. I am based out of Seattle, Washington. I am the director and global head of product marketing at Secure Code Warrior, and I've been a PMM for just about a decade now across a lot of size companies from Microsoft to Qualtrics and now the current startup of Secure Code Warrior.
You're what we call in the New to PMM crew a seasoned PMM. You have earned that title. You're at that level. Just wanted to let you know.
I appreciate that. That's a polite way to call me tenured.
But before we start, we have to start with our favorite segment, which is the lightning round questions. So going to start with, what is your go-to email sign off?
I'm pretty boring. I just say thanks. My my only wrinkle is I rarely put a comma after it. That's my little rebellion on grammar.
Love it. And what's the best part of your job?
Definitely the people. Huge proponent of the people you work with and the customers you serve are what makes it fun and what makes it worth doing.
And what is something you're new to?
New to home ownership. My wife and I have got a 100-year-old house, so I'm learning a lot about how to do some things by hand. I'm not going to pretend I'm a huge DIY guy, but it's been nice to learn some of the basics from my wife and her family.
Amazing. And what is your product marketing superpower?
I'm pretty good with an analogy. I think I can break down how things work for different personas, for different internal people to help both coach them and how to speak a little better, sometimes about the value props themselves, as well as ultimately figure out how to articulate why does this matter to someone. So I think analogies are one of my more fun superpowers, if I can claim that.
That is a super fun superpower. I love that. And on the home ownership thing, I'm about to move into a 150-year-old apartment. So give me some tips if you have any on handling ghosts, because I am terrified.
You got to call the Ghostbusters. That's the main
right,
one.
Right? Yeah, no, I'm so scared. So to start into today's questions, if you could start off and just tell me a little bit about your career journey so far and how you first discovered product marketing.
Absolutely. I joined Microsoft out of college, and my very first job was as a growth marketer. So your kind of classic outbound email marketing type of job. And I was responsible for basically onboarding new customers to Office. And one of the first thoughts, especially back then, was, what do you mean onboarding? Like, people purchase Office? Like, they didn't even realize it was happening. And I was part of the transition to becoming a subscription model. So really a SaaS business for Office itself. And I really loved what I was doing of announcing new features. You know, some of the first things I ever got to work on were bringing Office to iOS and Android for the first time, which, to your word of seasoned before, makes me start to feel a little bit dated, but it was a pretty monumental opportunity in the tech industry. But I realized I got much more excited talking to the people who were figuring out what's the story behind this. How are we going to explain the value, as opposed to being the person who kind of takes those ingredients and turns it into, you know, an execution strategy in my channel. And all of a sudden I looked around and realized swimming upstream, getting earlier in that process, was more exciting to me. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of where I realized all of a sudden, all these people that I see around the building doing interesting things, in my mind, they were PMMs. It felt a little bit like the cool kids table, so to speak, in my early career. And fortunately, I got to know some of my mentors, or people who become my mentors rather, and future managers, and let them know my interests, my passions. And fortunately, there was a slot. And ultimately, after a couple of years, I became the PMM for Microsoft OneNote. So I started with an extremely passionate fan base in particular, mm-hmm. but a product that wasn't really expected to make any money, relatively speaking, for Microsoft. So it was a really interesting playground to be a part of for having fun, having the right challenges. But relatively speaking, we didn't have really high stakes from the dollar side of the house. As later in my career, I've realized everything needs to tie back to the dollar much better than that first PMM job required of me.
For sure. I love that concept of just looking around, seeing who the people are that are doing the cool stuff and stuff you want to do and following them, being like, hey, why can't I do that? Did you have any strategy to navigating that switch from, you know, growth marketing to product marketing internally? I know a lot of people, the debate is, do I try to move into PMM internally or do, you know, externally? Like, how did you make that switch within Microsoft?
Definitely where possible. I think, as you said, Maggie, the internal switch is more common and more possible. I like to think a lot about, we were talking about metaphors, analogies before. I like to think about a stool. You know, you've got kind of three legs in your stool. And if you think about that as the different pieces of your career, maybe it's industry, discipline, company size, whatever the situation might be, you kind of always want to stay balanced. You know, it's pretty hard to balance with only one leg still on the ground, so to speak. So with that in mind, I said to myself, I want to hopefully stay a part of Microsoft, part of the same industry, but the discipline switch, like that's where the challenge could come away, but two legs on the ground, you're still actually balanced on that stool. And one of the primary things I tried to pitch myself on at the time was through, of course, just networking, because it was internal, getting to know people. But I started asking for, as part of my outbound marketing projects, how could I get a little higher upstream? Just asking, why did you make these choices? Who even makes these decisions to begin with? So it was all about just starting to learn who does this and what is it. And then as I started to understand what product marketing even is, I realized my benefit, my opportunity here was to say, well, I'm the person that used to catch this sort of information in a channel. Therefore, I believe I can be a really smart PMM, ideally, if you can create some of those ingredients, because now you better understand how you're going to hand them off or partner with your teams. It was really about figuring out what was the value proposition of me as a growth marketer. And I focused primarily on curiosity, eagerness to learn, and realizing I've been in the channel, so I'll know how to speak to the channel.
Makes a lot of sense. There's so many paths into PMM. It's such a great discipline to get into. So yeah, that's awesome how you were able to navigate that internal switch. So over your career, you've worked in many different, you know, company setup, starting off at Microsoft, which is, you know, massive, notable enterprise size company, to different stage startups. And now you are at Secure Code Warrior. So can you just talk about the differences between being a product marketer on these different size companies, team sizes? What is that like? How is that different?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a couple of dimensions to think about with the product marketing experience in relation to these. The first one, it's not even necessarily about the size of the company. I'd say it's the style of company. Microsoft is a product company. Like at the end of the day, it is product led, and that is going to be the strategy. Qualtrics, where I worked next, was a sales company at the end of the day. And then where I am now as a startup, I think we're still figuring out who we are, but I would say we lean more towards the product side of the house. And none of these are good or bad. It's sort of like when you get your personality traits, it's not good or bad. It's just a little of who are you? Like, where is your story? And as you think about the different style of the company, that's going to also start to bleed into, well, what might you flex into or consider the core package of a PMM? So at Microsoft, both in terms of scale, but also being a product-led company, the vast majority of your day is spent very deeply intertwined with the product management team. You kind of create, hopefully, an ideal relationship. You build trust with each other and you really earn a seat at the table and you try to get away from what I would consider the four letter phrase, so to speak, of they threw it over the fence and now I've got to catch it. Super difficult at a big company.
That's like the number one phrase you don't want to hear in PMM.
Yeah. So when you're at a Microsoft or that size of company in particular, it's much more likely you're going to specialize in a lane. PMM is still pretty amorphous. You're going to do a lot of different things. But at Microsoft, as an example, there were more inbound PMMs and outbound PMMs. Essentially, as an inbound PMM, you're going to do a lot deeper partnership with the product side of the house, your classic value prop messaging, and you'll start to do the launches themselves. But there's sometimes a different side of the house, the other half of a PMM, so to speak. And this will vary greatly by team size, structure, like we were saying. But you're going to have more people who are doing enablement to the sales org, enablement to the field, these broader kind of sales-led strategies. And that is something I think isn't as common at smaller companies. So you don't really get to split out your role as much. You have to own the entire area. Working at a really big company like Microsoft, I felt like was a great opportunity to find what I'd call floor and polish. you're going to learn some really strong fundamental techniques, some skill sets, some one perspective on how to be a professional in the tech industry. But it's a little bit hard to have what I'd consider big creativity at the end of the day, or to have a very monumental impact in that type of scale of influence in the org. You have huge impact because you have millions or billions of users, but that's one of the things in particular I think is interesting at the big company, kind of name brand, reputable template approach. The next phase where I was at with Qualtrics was a hyper-growth company, late stage, scale up to startup type of environment. They actually got acquired while I was there by SAP and then spun out for an IPO. At that place, because they were a sales-led, quote unquote, all of a sudden, one of the most important things was how do I actually track my metrics and my numbers all the way through to see what was the impact of this blog? And it really pushed you to get outside of this vanity metrics world where someone says, you know, hey, Maggie, how did that launch go? And you say, well, 1,000 people checked out the blog. Like, well, what did they do when they got there? So all of these sort of sales side of the house, opportunities and deep CS enablement as well, became much more critical at a sales-led company. Because I still had full responsibility for partnering with the product management team, launching new businesses based on new product SKUs, but you really could flex in more directions and figure out what else is out there. We're sort of at that mid-funnel stage. You have even more of that very classic phrase of wear all the hats, be agile, be comfortable. And then in this phase of my career now at Secure Code Warrior, we are really rebuilding, reestablishing what does it mean to be a product marketing organization and retraining our own internal audience, as in our colleagues, our peer organizations in sales, CS, product management, et cetera. What's the value that we can offer? You've got to have a real big bias for action and much more of a comfort level of saying, this is probably pretty good for a quarter or two. We might have to rebuild soon.
You know, I think being an early career professional, it's always a balance of wanting to go somewhere with enough opportunity where you can grow and try new things and not be too pigeonholed, but then with enough structure and having, you know, that established PMM, you know, leadership. So it's really a tricky balance. The startups are great as long as it has somebody like you who is an experienced PMM lead who can guide you along the way and add that structure.
You know, it comes from a place of privilege to sometimes be selective and have these opportunities, but within reason, I do often coach people or advise them of, unless you are really confident a startup is for you, startups are really difficult places, I would say, to get a little bit of that fundamental floor. You know, you almost think like an athlete sometimes. People have like, you know, high ceilings, they say, when they go into a sports draft, and some people have different like floors. Mm-hmm. I do think a startup is a place where maybe you can change your ceiling a little bit, and that's awesome. But it's very difficult to sometimes know, are you learning the right things, quote unquote? People fresh out of undergrad or coming out of MBA programs making a pivot, if they have the opportunity, I actually find more of the mid-stage or hyper-growth sort of, you know, a Series C maybe if you do want some of that experience still. What I've seen in my career from people I coach and people that coach me as well, that seems like the smallest or earliest, quote unquote, phase I'd look at for that. Mm-hmm. But it's not a one-size-fits-all rule.
Good rule of thumb, but yeah, of course. Did you personally encounter any challenges making the transition between being a product marketer at these different companies at different stages? What was that like for you?
I think the first one I would say is getting really comfortable as you move among companies or maybe to earlier stages, depending on the direction you went in. But I can only really speak to my experience. Of course, one of the difficulties I think is realizing how little process might exist at other places. Or getting comfortable with the idea of just because something has been done that way before, can we change it? Or saying, when people tell you, oh, you know, Maggie, we've tried that before. And you go, but when did you try it? 3 years ago. Like, okay, but well, the company was 200 people 3 years ago. Now we're 1,000. Or whatever the situation might be. I think that was a pretty interesting learning opportunity for me, was realizing comfort on both sides of that equation, of the coin, if you will, of, there could be no formula or no template, which means you get to make the first thing yourself. And that doesn't have to mean it's super complex or complicated or absolutely perfect. It just means, are you the first person that put pen to paper and put a template? And then can you share it with someone else? Can you help to grow it? There has to be much more of a culture of scaling all the time. Where at a company like Microsoft, you might get handed a template and you make your tweaks on the edges, and maybe you encourage your team to use some of your tweaks if they landed well in the way you need to. But at these other stages of companies, getting very comfortable saying, I can make the first draft, I think is one of the huge, huge differences. The other big thing I think really will speak to a lot of people listening in at any phase company is you're going to encounter moments where you're shocked by how little oversight you have. And in other cases, you're gonna be like, I can't believe we're having a meeting about this. At any phase company, like, you'll feel both sides of that house. I remember when I joined Qualtrics, one of the first things I was working on was a big conference for them. And it was a massive, you know, 10,000 person conference for the users, but we didn't have a demo booth plan. And I kind of brought this up to my boss at the time. And they're like, yeah, demos make sense. Go figure it out. It's like, what do you mean I was going to figure it out? They're like, you identified an opportunity. What's your game plan? So, you know, I made my deck and I put together a few slides, and then my boss helped me out. We scheduled a meeting, and I was meeting with the CMO and head of growth. And I kind of like looked left, I looked right, and I was like, me? I present to the CMO? It's a 2,000 person company. My boss was like, yeah, it's your idea. So I walk him through it, and I know this is a funny detail to me, so in retrospect, I just used a generic Google Slides template. It wasn't like a perfectly formatted word for word thing. We get to the end of this 30 minutes. He literally looks at me, goes, gives me a thumbs up and says, if it costs more than 20 grand, call me. Other than that, go do whatever you want. And my mind was blown. Like, I could never have imagined at Microsoft going into a meeting where I didn't have a exact word for word, perfectly formatted bullet point on every single detail, or to get the quick thumbs up. And what that really showed me was, the only limits you put on yourself, at least creatively, are what you instill to some degree. Mm-hmm. You're going to have your checks and balances. You're going to still need to fit in a budget, whatever it might be. But that really taught me how to say, dream really big and let someone else limit you. And that was a pretty eye-opening realization for me as I've moved through these different companies so far.
I often find myself in situations where I'm like, I'm in charge of this too. Like, I get in similar situations where I'm like, okay. And then sometimes when something is like a little lift and it takes like 5 meetings to do and like 10 stakeholders, wild.
Yeah. And it's part of being a product marketer. I think people that succeed well here are very open to the idea of saying, I identified a gap. I'm going to try to fill it. And that doesn't mean you have to fill it forever. Like, don't be a punching bag or get stepped on, but there's a big benefit to your personal growth and the company if occasionally you can say, I found a gap, I don't know who's supposed to own it, I'm going to figure it out the first time and then make it a better thing I can leave for the next person who's quote unquote supposed to maybe own it to collaborate. And that's part of what I love about being a PMM and coaching and managing PMMs is there are so many different directions you can lean into. Like you were saying before, there's no one way to become a PMM. I mean, there's also no one way to stay a successful PMM and become a successful PMM over time.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a valued skill for PMMs. Seeking external resources, networking with other people, seeing what they're doing, taking courses, and not just having either, you know, your internal PMM team. Oh, well, we've always done it this way. There's always so many new opportunities to grow in like different areas for product marketing.
You know, what you're hitting on there too, of like, hey, you're supposed to share your ideas. That's a question that I think people are often asking or not even realizing that's holding them back, is people are sort of waiting for this like Las Vegas flashing light and neon saying, hey, Maggie, what's your idea? that's not how life really works professionally. I think that there is this mental hurdle of saying, when do I present my big idea? And it's like a very overwhelming feeling where it's not always about, quote, the big idea, you know, a whole new product, or how are you going to reinvent digital billboards or something. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just start off with saying, hey, I was looking into this messaging framework. I think if we added in a line that was about customer pain points, that would really help unlock something.
Like, yeah,
that's an idea just as much as a new strategy to say, hey, we're going to syndicate our blogs on these trade publications and I want to get the budget for it. Both are ideas with varying impact. Mm-hmm. And that's where you hopefully start getting more comfortable to say, I'm thinking strategically. Because that's something that always comes up too, is like, how do I do strategy? Well, everything can be strategic if you think about what could you do in addition to your execution, or how do you scale it to another part of the business? And again, like, that's to me one of the fun things about PMM is we've got these pretty wide open questions or problems to solve if you're able to kind of open yourself up and look for them.
Absolutely. Sky is the limit there. So another element of your journey, Scott, is you are in an MBA program. And this is a hot topic in the space and an internal hot topic of mine of, do I get an MBA? It's very existential. I'm sure a lot of people listening are in it right now. Can you tell me more about your decision to join an MBA program at this point in your career? And how has it benefited you so far as a product marketer?
Definitely. It's a very hard and personal choice to go or not. And so I went to University of Michigan for my undergrad. And I'm a very proud alum, and go blue for anyone else listening out there. But I studied psychology of business. So it was really a very liberal arts classic type of training ground for learning how to think, as they say. And I loved that. And I was very fortunate to start my career at Microsoft, like I was saying earlier, with a pretty good floor of learning and opportunity. But I realized for me, I was pretty keen to round myself out in an academic sense. And what I mean by that is I felt really strong and comfortable with the more traditional side of marketing, but I knew both in my just interests and what I was hoping my career doors would allow me to walk through over time, I had to get more comfortable with data. I had to get more comfortable with the business itself. Like, how does a company truly understand what's happening and connect some of these dots of operations to supply chain back to what I actually do as a marketer? Because marketing sometimes, I think it's a bit of an unfair rep where people might think about it as like an old school, you know, simple, like you're writing taglines. Nothing wrong with that either. But the whole thing is, if you're thinking about marketing in, I think, a more mature, sophisticated way, you realize marketing is business, right? This is a massive driver of how do we actually make money and things of that nature to be a successful company. And that was part of what really pushed me to think about going back to school. I go to a part-time program at the University of Washington, and by going part-time as opposed to full-time, I'm still working. I'm still getting my experience. The finances are a lot easier too. I have money coming in, fortunately. But a big reason I chose to go part-time was, for me personally, I felt like I was already on the path. A full-time MBA is very classic for a career switch. I wasn't looking to switch careers. I wanted to hopefully keep doors open and find myself interested and excited in what I had to learn. So that was a big part of the decision for me, was saying, how do I become more well-rounded and hopefully get ready for the next phase of my career? And so at the end of the day, I would say for anyone else thinking about it out there, an MBA is not required, but you have to figure out what is your personal motivation that will keep you engaged throughout the process, and what are the realistic outcomes you want on the other side. And if the answer is an advanced degree, that's okay too. Find your why and then be open to rediscovering what that really is as you start the classes.
That makes sense. Well, you know, good for our listeners to think about, but also for me to think about. That's why I was partially selfishly asking that question. That's great. I'm glad you've been able to get so much from your program so far.
Thank you.
So now that you are building your own team, you have seen the other end of the interview process that a lot of our, you know, listeners are going through. What do you wish that more aspiring PMMs knew about that application interview process?
When it comes down to being a PMM and interviewing from this side of the table now, so to speak, what I really look for is a set of personality traits. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at the job listings that I post, I very intentionally will write, essentially, here are some of the qualities we would like to see. Some, emphasis on the word some, like there is not a requirement. I don't need you to have done 10 out of 10 things. Yep. I hope that you've done a few of them. So starting from that point of understanding, where are you compared to the job description or the character traits somebody might be implying in their job description they're looking for, and key in on some of them. And don't be scared to apply if you've only got some, not all. So that's one piece. For me, when I think about some of those traits, I really want to find people who are curious, humble, and willing to be coaches at any level. So the reason by being curious is so important is, as a PMM, you are constantly having to lean into different pieces of the business model or lean into new pieces of technology that might not be something you've ever looked at before. So being curious and the desire and drive to learn more and be a self-starter, you know, are you reading outside of work? Mm-hmm. Are you just talking to people in your network? Or are you grabbing a virtual coffee with someone at your company so you can build relationships there? Next part about being humble. So humble works in two directions, humble in realizing what you don't know, kind of the point of curiosity, but also can you be humble in what you do know? Are you going to be willing to share information with your broader team, explain what you've been learning? And that'll get you out of this habit people have as PMM sometimes where they say, I kind of pass information left to right. You know, I get the details from the product manager and then I give it to the email marketer. That's not really going to help your team. It's not going to help your job. So being humble in how do you also share information, I think is critical. And then at the end of the day, that sort of last piece here, you really want to focus on your ability to coach. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe at any stage of your career, you have something to offer, and hopefully the company and your leader has something to offer you. So those are three traits that are, to me, super important. Not quite a trait, but the last thing I really like to look for in particular, and you know, people out there listening and thinking about interviewing, PMMs are meant to be catalysts. We are drivers of a lot of energy, you know, at the business. I always value and love to see folks who know how to get a lot done without necessarily all information available to them. So being comfortable with the idea of, I made a choice with the information I had, and I'm willing to revisit it if I get new information, mm-hmm. I think is something that's really helpful. And then the last piece related to that, I always really appreciate seeing in candidates and trying to coach in my employees, understanding of how did you scale beyond you? And that's not just for managers or for senior people. It goes back to, again, this idea of if you've created a new template or if you figured out a new way to go to market and a lane of your campaign, have you tried to influence the rest of your immediate team or the rest of your org? How are you going to drive impact that's broader than yourself? And so those are some of the things that I know that I personally look for. And I think sharing traits and characteristics, because people can grow into any of those or manifest them in different ways for who they are, I personally find is more helpful when you're trying to interview or find candidates is what are some of these skills that will make you a culture add or a team add instead of the old school think of team fit. Like you don't have to fit a perfect bubble. You want to add some layer of this mentality to the healthy culture of a team.
And I think a lot of what you're touching on too comes back to like the interpersonal communication skills when you're talking about being humble and humble in your communication to others. And I think why that's so important is there's so much informal influence that you have as a product marketer and being able to collaborate with other teams. And it's not a role where you're, you know, walking around and you're like, I'm in charge of this and this is how it's going to be. Like being able to influence people and share your knowledge in a humble way is so important.
Yeah, I used to have an exercise we would do is when we were at Microsoft and we went around the room asking for superpowers, but you couldn't talk about yourself. Everyone else had to say what they thought was one of your skills. And I felt really proud and appreciative to find out that what the product team thought about me was I walk into the room with a point of view, but I'm very willing to change that point of view if information's presented. And it sounds simple, but it was something that I feel really proud that they recognized in me. And sometimes once you find out what someone else thinks your skills are, you realize, wow, I have that strength I didn't even know, and you want to cultivate it more. So, you know, in that mindset, we are supposed to get customer feedback all the time. Don't forget to get feedback from some folks at your company when you can. Just start that relationship. And one of the nice things too, just for psychology, is when people do you a favor, they often like you more. So sometimes like asking for feedback, asking for coaching, they'll usually like you a little bit more too. And they'll be like, oh, Maggie's been working on that thing, or it's really cool to work with her, or, you know, or him, whoever it might be. So look for feedback. People are more willing to give it than you think.
Always scary when you're like, hey, what do you think of me? But, you know, it's super important. So going into some closing questions, I love to ask everybody, if you could go back to your first day of being a product marketer and give yourself a piece of advice, what would it be?
You don't have to know everything. Your job is not to have memorized every single piece of information. Taking copious notes and getting prepared for the meeting, that's okay too. Or bringing in one of your partners when you need them is not a sign of your inability to have understood the problem set. It's about widening the aperture of who you can bring in. I think earlier in career, I wanted to feel like I had every number memorized or every detail, and that's good. Like, it's helpful to have that stuff ready to go. Don't get me wrong, but there are certain meetings where you need 30,000 foot view and some meetings where you need a 3 foot view. Start to figure out as best you can which is which, and then that'll really save you some mental energy on what do you, you know, memorize compared to what do you document or when do you want to bring in a colleague.
And what is a skill that you're looking to grow over the next year?
I am trying to figure out more confidently or how to become a manager that both has the right level of transparency that I can create trust and honesty with my new team that I'm building out, but also how do I get more comfortable and aware that there is a little bit of a difference in the relationship now. Mm-hmm. Instead of being a principal or a senior individual contributor who mentors and coaches, there is a little bit of a difference of what does it mean to be transparent, helpful, empowering, but also you've got to have a poker face occasionally, or I don't like to say toe the company line, but you know, sometimes you want to keep some of your disagreements behind the scenes. I think that's a very natural thing as you kind of move through your career to figure out. I'm a very emotional type of person and leader. Mm-hmm. So how do I keep my authentic core while also realizing you do sometimes walk into different rooms with different attitudes and
for sure
bring that poker face and hold the disagreement for another time occasionally.
Oh, you're giving me now stress for like 10 years in the future for me because I have the worst poker face of all time. And people always call me out on like, oh, Maggie's thinking this, Maggie's thinking that. And I'm just like, oh my God, don't look at me, please. So
yeah. One of the tough things too with being a more emotive person, which I definitely am, is sometimes people then say, oh, like Scott was feeling that way, blah, blah, blah. And like, well, they don't ask you directly. Yeah. You don't get to go back and say, no, actually there was a fly around my room, so I made a weird face. You don't really always get the chance to explain yourself, you know, your brand, your persona, whatever it might be. It's thousands of interactions, you know, micro emotions, whatever they are. And I will say just one other piece on that topic. One lesson I learned, I wish I learned earlier in my career too, was your boss's point of view on you, your colleague's point of view on you. It's not like an ATM machine where you make deposits and withdrawals with every single interaction. You kind of build up over time a general point of view of Scott is like this. And it takes more effort than you think to sort of break out for better or worse some of those pieces. And I think when I was younger, I really was just like, okay, I had a pretty good meeting. Did I go up 10 points on the scale with my boss? Or, ooh, I didn't do so well there. I lost a couple of points. And one boss was just like, I don't have the time to think about you like that. You know, it's like your friends. You generally know what they're like. Occasionally, you start to update your point of view on some of their traits. But bosses are just people. You know, colleagues are just people. So it's not such a clean withdrawal and deposit, which is what it felt like earlier in my career.
That's a great point of view. So the next time you say something in front of your boss or, you know, somebody and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I said that. That was so stupid. You know, you didn't drop 10 points in their book. Like, don't worry about it. Don't lose sleep over it. And finally, do you have a book or podcast recommendation for the new to PMM crew?
Yeah, a podcast I really enjoy. It is called Dreams with Deadlines, and it's hosted by Jenny Harold. Mm-hmm. She's the vice president of evangelism at a company called GTM Hub. And what they do is OKR software. Like, it's software to help companies better document their goals and things of that nature. And every episode, she brings on someone to talk about how do they go about setting goals, like philosophically, and how do you kind of try to achieve success. I was fortunate to be an early guest on that show, and she's a friend of mine from a different startup and Microsoft acquisition over the years. So Dreams with Deadlines, I think, is a really nice one where you're learning, but you're not feeling like, oh my God, I'm reading a textbook right now, or it's like business homework. It's all right. This is pretty cool. I'm like learning a point of view on something. So that's one I definitely recommend to people.
I will make sure to check that out. That's awesome. Always love a new podcast recommendation. And finally, do you have any final thoughts for the new to PMM crew?
I think the main thing I would say is have courage and conviction. If this is something you want to go for, you might feel like a superstar on day one. It might take you months to feel comfortable. If you're able to get, you know, the PMM role that you're excited about, back to kind of that three stool legs I was saying earlier, find some of your strengths. PMM is such a wide-ranging job. See if you have the opportunity to lean into something that you already kind of know how to do if you're new to PMM, and that'll give you some confidence to get the ball rolling. So I would say as a new PMM or an aspiring PMM, keep going for it. Keep plugging away. The role is wide and diverse, and there's room for everybody.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Scott, and thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Maggie. This was a real pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining us for this week's episode. And thank you to our sponsor, the Product Marketing Alliance. As I said at the beginning of the episode, you can get 10% off their core certification course by using the code NEWTOPMM. I just finished up their module about personas. As a B2B girly myself, it was great learning about the differences between B2B and B2C personas. See you next time.